Well, investments into climate tech have seen a huge explosion this year, with funding more than tripling. But a new study points to the limited impact those investments are having on emissions reductions. Let's bring in one of the authors of that PwC report. We've got Leo Johnson, PwC UK partner and disruption lead. Leo, $87.5 billion is the number we're talking about in terms of the money raised in the space. Talk to me about how that compares to previous years, and what do you think has really driven the interest in the space?
So, Kiki, we're seeing a huge boom in the space. It's bigger deals, it's more investors, like 1,600 as opposed to 900 before. The deal size has quadrupled, and the volumes, they're just going through the roof. But the question is it going to the right stuff, the stuff that's really got the potential to take out the carbon that we need to take out and take out fast?
How do you measure that impact? I mean, you broke down where the investments are flowing in this report you've put out, a huge chunk of that going towards EVs, which tends to get a lot of the attention in the climate conversation.
I mean, that's exactly right. So, I mean, the first thing to say is that this market is huge and all of these sectors are underfunding and they need more funding. But mobility and transport, it kind of, as we say over here in the UK, it's eating all the pies. You know, a whole load of the capital is plowing into mobility. It's getting, 60-odd% of the funding. And in reality, it's about globally 16.2% of the emissions. So it's going in because it's the low-hanging fruit in a way. But what you're seeing is that there's a lot of sectors that have got a huge abatement potential, which just aren't getting the capital that some of their commercially viable technologies, which are really high impact abatement, look like they're making possible. And, I'm thinking in particular, like we looked at 15 climate tech solutions and the top five of them, Akiko, that together are 80% of the potential emissions reduction that we need by 2050, 80%, but they only got a quarter, 25% of the financing. And that's solar power, wind power, food waste technology, and green hydrogen, really not getting the level of capital that they should be.
Why do you think that's the case? I mean, if you look at a breakdown, which you have in your report, of seed funding, especially in some of these other technologies, it points to an actual dip. While overall funding did go up in the climate tech space, how much of this do you think is about risk aversion and investors just not really knowing that the market, the potential of some of these emerging technologies who have a lot of potential to make significant strides in emissions reductions?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think a lot of it is about risk aversion, but it's also about kind of the market mechanisms and the regulatory incentives to help these innovative technologies scale up. So if you take a look at some of those underfunded sectors, they're getting the early stage capital, the Series A financing, that's picked up since a bit of a dip in 2018 or post-2018 when the pandemic hit. That's picked up. But where they're really not attracting the capital, these critically underfunded sectors, is at the later stage, seed C and beyond, where the capital financing package really starts to get big. And I think, the argument isn't very complicated here. This is stuff where if you're going to be making a really big ticket investment, you want to make sure that the market and the regulatory environment is really baked in and solid. And the reality is, I think innovation is leading the regulatory framework. And we don't yet have the carbon taxes, the full incentive structure, the fully worked out subsidy structure to really help drive a stable regulatory environment where these types of scale-ups can flourish and therefore attract that seed C capital.
Yeah, on that point, there was huge hope riding on the Build Back Better Act here in the U.S. and the anticipation that could spur a lot of activity in this space. How big of a setback do you see this as? I mean, it's not dead completely, but certainly it's been pushed back significantly.
I think we're at a point where we've got a huge level of government debt globally, and At the same time, we've got a narrative around green growth, which we're seeing nations across the world, from the US to Europe to China, are seeing is going to be where the growth is. And I think if there are setbacks around government financing, there's got to be tailwinds behind a proposition that this is stuff that is an investment, where the return on the type of state underwriting and investment into this infrastructure is going to be positive. This isn't bailing out the banks material. This is targeted investment that's going to be generating economic returns, as well as the environmental returns, as well as the job returns. So I kind of put my money on just the sheer logic of it. It's going to keep making the case for government financing, and not just the government financing of the renewables business, but the gradual stripping away of the subsidies that have been propping up the fossil fuel business.
You mentioned the return on investment. Certainly a lot of investors who are investing in the public space looking for that return too. We saw a number of big EV companies come to market this year. A lot of them now under some investigation here, especially those that came through SPAC mergers. What did you find in terms of stock performance for some of these ESG stocks that did come to market this year, and how significantly or how much upside they saw?
So we saw something very interesting, which is not just that there was, you know, really impressive levels of performance, that we had the indexes based around low carbon startups performing, you know, outperforming S&P 500 by quite significant measures. But the other thing that we saw was that there was a spike beyond the IPO, that some of the existing and prominent venture capitalists are now saying, okay, we're missing out on huge amounts of value here. I think there's a Sequoia estimate that if they just held on for an extra year onto climate tech shares, they would have generated an extra $8 billion for their investors in added returns over the past 15 years. So there's something around the VC structure and flexing it to capture that continued growth and the performance of these climate tech stocks after the IPO that's definitely emerging.